Good afternoon, Your Honors. Catherine Sweetser for Plaintiff Appellant Tiffany Tabaris. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal if possible. The district court in this case committed reversible error by failing to apply California law to plaintiff's negligence claim. California law requires a broader look at pre-shooting tactics and the officer's conduct throughout the encounter, rather than the federal law standard, which examines the reasonableness of an officer's conduct at the moment the shots were fired.
Sorry about that.
In this case, there are numerous disputed facts about whether Officer Esparza breached his duty of care under California law by failing to de-escalate the encounter or call for backup as dictated by Post, despite numerous signs of mental illness on the part of Mr. Tabaris, by failing to warn Mr. Tabaris prior to the shooting, and by detaining Mr. Tabaris simply because he was unhoused.
Counsel, I was going to say, for me, it would probably help if you proceed a little more deliberately and slowly, and I'll give you an extra 2 minutes of argument to assure your cooperation.
Okay, thank you so much. Sorry about that. A jury should have determined whether Officer Esparza's conduct was negligent. Instead, the district court chose to exercise supplemental jurisdiction and applied the narrower federal standard to the officer's conduct at the moment of shooting, rather than apply the California standard regarding pre-shooting tactics to the entire encounter under Hayes. So this court should remand the case to the district court, California law standard, or decline supplemental jurisdiction. The plaintiff is entitled to a trial on her negligence claim. Below, plaintiff presented both a declaration from a former police officer who was present at the scene and a declaration from a police practices expert who testified that the conduct violated the Post standards. This evidence created material disputes of fact on this key issue. And in particular, at ER 201, plaintiff's expert opined that a reasonable officer in Officer Esparza's position would have known or should have known that Mr. Tabaris was mentally ill. Officers are trained to recognize indicators of mental illness, and Esparza listed at least 5 such indicators in his declaration at ER 308 to 310, including Mr. Tabaris was inappropriately dressed for the weather in a bulky suit. Tabaris was walking abnormally. He was exhibiting signs of paranoia or hypervigilance, and he was fidgeting or flinching. He also looked dazed. In fact, a reasonable former police officer at the scene, whose declaration is at ER 207, recognized Mr. Tabaris as presenting signs of mental illness. Plaintiff's witness stated that Mr. Tabaris was talking to himself and making gestures with his hands. He further testified he did not think the subject was dangerous, but he watched him because he thought he might be having mental health issues.
Counsel, do you need this argument to win? Meaning, does it matter whether the officer thought he was mentally ill or not? Or is there just a question on negligence about whether it was appropriate to fire the shots under the illness or not?
Well, the question under negligence is not solely whether it was appropriate to fire the shots at the moment of the shooting, but it's the totality of the circumstances and all of the pre-shooting tactical conduct. That's really the difference between state law and federal law, that you take into account all of the pre-shooting tactical conduct. So I would say that yes, the court can find that the officer did not appropriately de-escalate, failed to warn Mr. Tabaris, did not reasonably shoot Mr. Tabaris without
Why can't we just fundamentally say Mr. Tabaris at the time, this is an interesting case because we have 3 separate videos of what actually happened. You know, so many times we get stuck with affidavits, you know, which we have no basis of knowing whether they accurately represent what happened or what didn't happen. But you watch that video or all 3 of those videos and you put them together, can't you just say there is a question of fact as to whether when Mr. Tabaris was standing there unarmed and the officer stepping away from him, there's a question of fact whether or not it was reasonable to fire those shots at that moment.
Absolutely.
Isn't that enough? I mean, I'm not trying to take away all the other issues because I think you actually have some good arguments on them. But I'm just wondering how far this court has to go. I was a little bit confused by the district court's opinion because it seemed to suggest that the standard, and maybe this is what you were alluding to already, that the standard under state law seemed to be the same. It was almost as if the district court said, well, here I've made these decisions under federal law. State law is the same thing. So that's why we're dismissing these claims. And that in and of itself seems to be erroneous. And so the question then is how much further do we need to go into looking at all this? Do we still need to address all these different factors that you're talking about? Or do we just need to say, look, at a fundamental level, the state court standard under state law is different than the federal constitutional standard. You got to relook at this.
Absolutely. That's all this court needs to find, is that the district court applied the wrong standard and that the court should consider the state law standard or decline supplemental jurisdiction if it so chooses. But there is no need to reach all these issues if the court finds that the wrong legal standard was applied.
Okay. And I don't want to take away from these other arguments. You're fine to go. I just wanted to kind of get your position straight for me, because I wasn't sure if you were asking us if there's something that required us to find that there was. I mean, because you have evidence that, I mean, it's also pretty amazing that you had an ex-officer on scene that saw this and then puts in an affidavit about, you know, what his impression was. And so I didn't know if that was the key to your case or if the most fundamental point is, was it unreasonable to fire the shot? Anyway.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the most fundamental point is whether or not this shooting was unreasonable under state law. And I think this court has been clear in the past, and Hayes made very clear that a police shooting can be unreasonable under state law. It takes into account all of the pre-shooting conduct. It also takes into account, as you said, that he was unarmed, that the officer did not give a warning before firing. And there's been many cases since Hayes, including the Estate of Najaro case, the Rivera case, the Craig case, and Zion versus County of Orange, that have brought out this fact that there is a duty of care that the police owe to citizens, and that this shooting like this is in fact unreasonable under California law. But the court doesn't have to reach with the question of whether it's remanded simply to the state.
Is it your understanding? I was also surprised. I mean, you didn't appeal the federal constitutional claims. Just out of curiosity, what is there a reason that you didn't appeal those and you only appealed the state law claim?
The state law claim was the most clear error of law, and we do understand that the federal claims present other issues such as qualified immunity.
But the district court, at least as to the excessive force claim under the Fourth Amendment, I didn't see the district court as dismissing it under qualified immunity. It seemed like there was no constitutional violation, full stop.
Yes, well, we don't agree with that finding. We chose.
Well, but I'm shocked by it. I'm absolutely shocked by it, and I just can't make heads or tails of it, because I'll be honest. I mean, you didn't appeal it, but I'm absolutely shocked that the district court said that there was absolutely no possible way of there being a constitutional violation here. Now, whether there was qualified immunity is a separate question, but that's not what the district court relied on. And so many of these cases we get out of, or the plaintiffs end up losing because of qualified immunity. And the Supreme Court has set down a pretty tough standard for qualified immunity, but that's not this case. So I'm just wondering what I'm missing about this case, because this seems, you know, the district court's opinion here seems way off the reservation of what the case law would normally require. And I'm just wondering what I'm missing here.
I mean, we absolutely agree with you.
Okay.
Yes. So, the plaintiff appellant would just say that Scott versus Harris did not justify this decision. As in Zetwick and Voss, reasonable inferences, as Judge Nelson just pointed out, can be different reasonable inferences can be drawn from the video, and the video doesn't show the start of the encounter. So it doesn't affect this pre-shooting conduct. And if there are no further questions, I'll just reserve time for rebuttal.
None here, Judge Kelly. Any question, Judge Kelly? Please, you can reserve your time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
We'll hear from Mr. Chong.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I guess I'd like to start with clarifying some things that were brought up by Judge Nelson. And the most important fact is something that Judge Nelson alluded to, is the fact that plaintiff did not appeal the summary judgment on the Fourth Amendment excessive force claim. And we believe that that's actually dispositive of the negligence claim as well. In Hernandez
this is where I really struggle. I got to be honest with you. I do not see the case law to suggest that a constitutional violation is the same thing as a state law negligence claim. I think to the extent that we try and conflate those two standards, we've totally undermined the Constitution. And that's why I'm admittedly a little bit surprised that the district court made the decision that it did on the constitutional claim. You agree that the district court found there was no constitutional violation. It did not say that the officer was entitled to qualified immunity on the Fourth Amendment excessive force claim. Is that right?
Well, by definition, since there was no constitutional violation, they're entitled to summary judgment. It didn't reach the second.
No, I understand that. But there's two ways to get to summary judgment. One is to say, well, it might have been a constitutional violation, but the officer was entitled to qualified immunity. Or there just was no way under, you know, at all that there was a constitutional violation. And you agree that the district court did not rely upon qualified immunity, but instead said there was no way that this was a constitutional violation here.
Correct. It didn't rely on the second prong of qualified immunity. It reached the underlying question of whether there
just
was...
There was no constitutional violation at all.
Correct. And I think to that point, Your Honor, if you look at the California Supreme Court case, Hernandez versus City of Pomona, we cited it in our briefing. It's 46 Cal 4th 501. It's from 2009. It said that to the extent that the pre-shooting conduct alleged under the claim of negligence under state law, to the extent that those matters were addressed on the Fourth Amendment excessive force claim, it's dispositive of that aspect of the state law claim. So plaintiff has to identify some pre-shooting conduct that was not a basis for the Fourth Amendment claim in order to have a broader negligence claim. So to the extent that I will agree with you, Your Honor, that negligence is not categorically the same as a Fourth Amendment excessive force claim. However, to the extent that the Fourth Amendment excessive force claim was determined against the plaintiff and the plaintiff has not appealed that aspect of the ruling, she's bound by those determinations as to those facts that were addressed and adjudicated as part of the Fourth Amendment claim. And what's key is that everything that...
Counsel, Judge Gould, if I could interject.
Yes.
Were there particular findings of fact that the court said were instrumental in its dismissal of the constitutional claim?
Well, Your Honor, it was obviously a totality of the circumstances analysis. However, just as a brief
summary. My question was, were there particular findings of fact that the district court made and said were relevant or material?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, in brief summary, Your Honor, there was the fact that Officer Esparza, as a certified drug recognition expert, saw objective signs of drug intoxication, which was corroborated by the independent registered nurse who has training and experience in the emergency room with people who are under the influence of stimulants, who concurrently believed that the decedent was under the influence of PCP or methamphetamine, which was further confirmed by postmortem toxicology that showed that he had methamphetamine in his system. Then the fact that all of the witnesses agreed that the decedent aggressively advanced on the officer when the officer pulled out his taser and told him to stop. He did not stop, and he had the taser, and he still didn't stop. And significantly, as the district court recognized in its opinion below, the plaintiff's counsel at oral argument made expressly clear they took no issue with the reasonableness of the deploying of the taser. So all the way up through there, you have lawful conduct on behalf of Officer Esparza. And at that point, the decedent swings his right fist and connects with the officer's head. They go to the ground, and it's an all-out struggle, as one of the independent witnesses described it himself. And during that encounter, Officer Esparza testified that the decedent grabbed his gun in his holster and yanked it to try to get it out of his holster. He didn't.
He didn't get the gun. Yeah, and Officer Esparza knew he didn't get there. Excuse me. Yeah, Officer knew he didn't get the gun.
Yes, Your Honor, but as the district court cited in the decision below, there's a factually materially analogous case in the Ninth Circuit, Billington versus Smith, in which the suspect grabbed an officer's gun. He did not successfully take the gun away, but that was still enough to justify the shooting in that case.
I can't accept that. That's where this whole thing falls apart for me. If you're in the struggle, perhaps, but here where the officer had gotten away from Mr. Tabarez and was backing up, had his gun. I mean, we can see the whole thing.
I understand.
I just don't understand how this can't possibly, under any reasonable theory, be negligence.
Your Honor, that was the exact same circumstances in Billington versus
Smith. No, it wasn't the same situation in Billington. In Billington, they were still engaged in the struggle.
Your Honor, there was a separation of several feet, and that is exactly the same as what occurred.
Yeah, but my understanding, they may have had a separation, but he was coming at him. Now, if Tabarez had charged him a second time, this might be a different case.
And Your Honor, in this case, it's on that score, it's actually more justified is in Billington, because in this case, Mr. Tabarez armed himself with an object off of Mr. Esparza's person, which
is your position. Hold on. Is your position that an officer is authorized to shoot somebody who's holding a flashlight? Is that your position?
No, Your Honor, not just for holding a flashlight.
Thank you.
Your Honor, he received.
But don't talk about, he was holding an object. Let's be accurate about what he was holding. He was holding a flashlight. He wasn't holding a knife. He wasn't holding a gun. He was holding a flashlight.
Well, Your Honor, in the split second time he had to make the determination, he reasonably perceived it was his knife. Shannon Forge, the registered nurse who was in the car right next to the incident, she saw it and she thought it was a knife. And Mr. Tabarez was not just merely holding it. He was bringing it up to his waist height and turning toward Officer Esparza. And that's clear from the video.
Was Mr. Tabarez moving towards the officer?
I submit he absolutely was, Your Honor. He was turning toward Mr. Esparza.
He was turning towards him. Did he take a step towards Mr. Tabarez?
He actually did take a step off of the curb toward Officer Esparza, Your Honor. And that's clear from both and that's also clear from his body-worn camera footage. From this circuit. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
If reasonable witnesses could disagree about whether it should have appeared he was holding a flashlight or it should have appeared he was holding a weapon, is that an issue for a jury rather than an issue for summary judgment?
Well, Your Honor, first of all, again, the plaintiff's counsel or plaintiff has not challenged that determination as under the Fourth Amendment excessive force analysis. So again, she's bound by it.
Okay,
but the other thing,
that determination I thought there was not a specific determination that he was holding a knife.
Your Honor, he was not holding a knife, but it was not disputed that Officer Esparza reasonably perceived that it was his knife, because it was the same size, same color, and same shape as his knife.
Counsel, I really don't know how you can say that. I really don't know how. I watched the video. You've watched the video. We've all watched it. He said immediately after the shooting, when he called it in, that he was holding his, that Mr. Tavares was holding his flashlight.
And Your Honor, if you look closely at the video, you could see him looking down at his body and making that determination.
So you're saying he didn't know at the time of the shooting, but he found it out later.
Yes.
Or he figured it out. Okay.
He took that's in his declaration, and you could see it in the video itself. He looks down, he checks his person, and then notices it was my flashlight, not my knife. And Your Honor, again, plaintiff is bound by that determination. And if I could get back to that recent case that I wanted to direct your attention to, it's Monzon versus City of Murrieta, 966 F3rd 946. It was decided July 22nd of this year, and then amended on denial of rehearing in October. So that's why it wasn't in our brief. But first, resolving the Fourth Amendment excessive force claim in favor of the officers, the panel went on to say, with regards to Hayes and the negligence claim, that although California negligence law considers the totality of circumstances surrounding a use of deadly force, and it's broader than federal Fourth Amendment law, the officers there acted reasonably under the circumstances leading up to and at the moment of their use of deadly force. There wasn't a separate analysis in that case because, just like here, the same issues were briefed under the Fourth Amendment claim and the negligence claim. And significantly and saliently, it was the same trial counsel there as here, Dale Gallipo and the Gallipo firm. They relied on the same set of facts to argue that the use of force was unreasonable under the Fourth Amendment. And they relied the same set of facts to argue that it was negligent. And that's the same exact situation you have here. And again, for whatever reason, plaintiff didn't appeal the determination under the Fourth Amendment. And those determinations are binding. And under Hernandez versus City of Pomona, to that extent, that she is so limited. Now, I also wanted to discuss the declaration of the former officer that Your Honor raised. And again, because the plaintiff hadn't appealed the Fourth Amendment issue, that's all just been decided against her. But what's significant is there's video evidence that has to be credited, and all of the facts have to be taken in the light depicted in the videotape. And that's from Scott versus Harris from the United States Supreme Court. And the significant facts on which that former officer relied in saying that he didn't believe that Mr. Tavares was a threat was he believed that Officer Esparza had already subdued the decedent and that the decedent was ready to pass out because he believed that Officer Esparza had placed him in a successful carotid hold. We know from all of the videos that is categorically false. He also said that he never saw anything in Mr. Tavares' hand. And again, we submit that Officer Esparza reasonably believed that Mr. Tavares had taken a knife off of his person, and significantly Ms. Forge, who was the closest person to the encounter, independently, contemporaneously believed that Mr. Tavares had armed himself with a knife. And in those split seconds, Officer Esparza could not be required to be 100% certain that it was just a flashlight, which in and of itself was a tactical flashlight with barbs on the end, capable of being used as an impact weapon. And certainly, Mr. Tavares was not going to be using it just for illumination.
Can I ask you, are the officers, in the training that officers received, are they taught that if their tactical flashlight is taken off of their belt, that they're justified in shooting the suspect?
Your Honor, I think under the totality of the circumstances here, where Mr. Tavares had engaged Officer Esparza in the fight for his life, trying to grab his gun, that
fight for his life. Hold on, where was the fight for his life?
Your Honor, I just said it right before you, Your Honor, asked the question. He tried to take Officer Esparza's gun.
Yeah, didn't get his gun. Tavares didn't get his gun, and there's no dispute that Officer Esparza knew that Tavares didn't get his gun. If there was a question about it, I'm with you.
Your Honor, again, as this Ninth Circuit has said in Billington versus Smith, the fact that the suspect forcibly attempts to obtain the gun tells you everything you need to know about that suspect's intent.
Absolutely. And that is this guy should have been locked up. Absolutely. It does not suggest that this guy should have been shot 6 times, then told to lay down, and then shot a 7th time.
Your Honor.
Mr. Cha, I'd like
yes.
From my perspective as one judge here, I would like you to give a specific answer to Judge Nelson's question, which was, in their training, were the officers told that if a suspect wrestled away their tactical flashlight, they should shoot to kill?
Your Honor, I think under this, the training...
The question is a question that really calls for a yes or no answer. And you should answer it yes or no first, and then add explanation.
Your Honor, I just cannot agree that it's a simple yes or no question, Your Honor. Again, questions of excessive force are a fact-bound totality of the circumstances analysis. And I would say that there's no specific training on what to do if someone has a flashlight. But under the circumstances where an officer reasonably perceives that his own life is in danger, where Shannon Forge independently thought her own life was in danger, and the officer reasonably believed that her life was in danger as well, that the use of deadly force is authorized when that is the case. And for that matter, that was the finding of the district court, and that was not appealed in this case. And again, that is dispositive, because there's nothing outside of what was determined under the Fourth Amendment that appellant has identified as the basis for her broader negligence claim. So again, the negligence claim, which was a throw-in, a desperate Hail Mary, as it were, was not argued.
Counsel, I was going to let you finish up. I was going to let you finish up because your time's done. But to suggest that a desperate claim when the officer shot him 6 times, 7 times, it just doesn't even pass the laugh test, counsel.
Well, Your Honor, with all due respect, I think Judge Staten is a fine jurist.
I agree, and I just can't understand. That's why I'm trying to figure out what I'm missing in this case.
And I think, Your Honor, she came to a reasoned decision, and that decision in and of itself is not under.
But I think it diminishes the office that you hold to suggest that it was a hail to bring a negligence claim when they were shot 7 times.
Well, if I could be clear, Your Honor, I'm not saying that the underlying...
That's what you said.
I'm not saying that the underlying claim itself was a Hail Mary. We're saying the idea that there was a broader negligence claim above and beyond the Fourth Amendment excessive force claim, that is what is the Hail Mary. Because, again, the appellant has not identified anything under the negligence theory that was not adjudicated under the Fourth Amendment. And this court does not have the jurisdiction, frankly, to challenge or overturn the district court's determination on the excessive force under the Fourth Amendment.
Well, yeah. That's your best argument.
I don't think anybody's addressing the Fourth Amendment issue that's not under appeal. But several of us have been addressing whether under the California negligence claim those facts were pertinent. And you've argued that they're foreclosed. So you're beyond your time. I'll just ask you to conclude your argument with, in the next 20 seconds, and we'll let the appellant have her rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. And again, I'll return back to the California Supreme Court case, Hernandez versus City of Pomona, which said that the issues that were decided under the Fourth Amendment are dispositive of the negligence claim. And any surviving broader pre-shooting negligence claim has to be based on things that were not adjudicated under the Fourth Amendment. And with that, we submit.
Thank you, counsel. And appellant, you have a few minutes.
Let me ask you maybe to just frame the rebuttal. I mean, the best argument does seem to be that you didn't appeal the Eighth Amendment, or excuse me, the Fourth Amendment excessive force claim, what degree of preclusive effect does that give to the findings? And we'll have to go back through and parse them out a little more of the district court. And how do you still have a potential negligence claim if we accept all the facts that the district court made on the excessive force claim, on the Fourth Amendment claim?
Plaintiff appellants contend that it would have very little preclusive effect. First of all, I believe the citation that Mr. Cha gave from Hernandez has been conclusively overruled by Hayes. Hayes had a lengthy paragraph at 697 discussing that it no longer applies. It was overruling that language from Hernandez explicitly. The district court focused its Fourth Amendment analysis on the split second before firing and did not look more broadly at the pre-shooting tactics and conduct that are encompassed by the California claim. The district court's findings of fact, what the district court was doing was finding as a matter of law that it did not reach the Fourth Amendment violation. And so that these facts didn't meet the Fourth Amendment standard, but it was not finding facts in the way a jury would as being the ultimate fact finder. And rather than Monson, which is a high-speed chase case and seems inapplicable, I would direct the court toward Mendez versus County of Los Angeles, the 2018 case, where the court in that case found that although there was qualified immunity and the Fourth Amendment was not violated, the knock and announce violation actually caused the ultimate use of force against the Mendezes. And this was despite the fact that after the officers had failed to knock and announce, Mr. Mendez got up and grabbed a BB gun. The court found that wasn't a superseding or intervening event. And I would submit that here, although the plaintiffs did say that we were not basing our claim on the taser, Mr. Cha is simply wrong that we conceded all the conduct up to that point. We did not. Both Zion versus County of Orange and Mendez made clear that conceding that one use of force might be appropriate, such as using a taser, does not mean conceding that the rest of the force is appropriate. So the district court's Fourth Amendment analysis does not control the state law claim at all, under Hayes or under Mendez. This is a case where an unhoused person was stopped without probable cause. It was not a felony stop. The officer approached him immediately, gave him commands to stop. When he tried to leave and avoid the encounter, the officer admitted that he followed him. And it's a case in which the officer failed to warn him before shooting. And we presented a police practice expert on them. Mr. Tavares should still be alive today if the officer had not breached his duty of care for Mr. Tavares. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. I want to commend both the counsel for appellant and counsel for appellee for your vigorous advocacy of your respective clients' positions. It's a difficult case and an important case, and the parties will hear from us in due course, but we thank you for your arguments. So the clerk should please note that the Tabaris case has I think that's our last argument case for today, and so we will now adjourn for the day.